short week next week, and I'm going to enjoy the shortness of both weeks. And I'm still not looking forward to the rest of this winter. I'm just hoping that we have a kind of mild winter.
Yeah, me too. I enjoy the warm weather, enjoy the outdoors, and maybe winter won't be so bad. Actually, last winter was not that bad. I think we had just one weekend where it was where it got really cold. If you remember last Christmas, it was in the 60s. I think December was a pretty mild December overall.
JD2MHI. Yeah, I mean, if I remember correctly, you're absolutely right. Last year wasn't that bad at all. And we didn't have much in the way of snow. We had a couple of dustings and then just that one snowstorm that came and, you know, got us pretty good. And I'm hoping kind of for a repeat of next year, minus the 3 feet of snow.
Right. No snow. I already seen enough on Saturday. I'm happy it's gone. So what kind of work do you do that you're on the road so early?
I'm a data communications technician, so I get to take care of a lot of Cat6 and fiber optics and radio communications. So this morning I'm heading up to Westchester.
Oh, okay. See you all over the place. Yeah, anything that with data or communications, that's the field to be in. I'm sort of in the same line.
Yeah, it's definitely not a bad field to be in. It's not as good as it used to be, but it's not a bad field. You know, it's enough to keep you busy.
Yeah, because when something stops working, that's when you come in and, you know, take care of the problems. And that's good. So I guess you do a lot of traveling throughout the area?
Mostly in the New York City, Long Island area. Occasionally we'll wind up, going upstate. Place where I work, they have a couple of state contracts, so, you know, they go to various agencies to, you know, take care of their companies.
Okay, that's good. At least you get out and you don't have to stay in one spot or behind a desk every day. That can become monotonous. Although I've done both. Not much of a pencil pusher, so to speak, using those terms, but basically I'm an electronics technician, and I've worked in various fields over the years, and then I started going out, you know, and dealing with customers and being on the road, and I like that, because it's different. Each day, you go somewhere else, and you see new people, and it's, I think it's more fun.
Oh, absolutely. I did the desk thing for a while. I did the desk thing for years, and after a while, the monotony of it drives you up a wall.
Yeah, I remember my first job. When I started working in the early 70s, I was working in a factory. We made electronic, what would you call, security systems. And then I went out into the field. I basically, there was a new company, and I came in sort of as an apprentice, I guess you would say, call it that. And I was still going to school, but I was working at the same time. And I started out as a electrical tester, and as the equipment was manufactured, or just after the manufacturing process, I was the one that turned it on for the first time and checked it out and made sure it didn't smoke. And then tested it, of course, to make sure it's working properly. But then I got good at it over time, and then I went into the field. And then I started training the field engineers, the people in the field that were actually installing these devices in the field. And I showed them, you know, what to do and how to fix it if there's a problem. And I liked that. It was nice to get out.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I think if I had to go back to sitting behind a desk, I don't think I'd be able to do it at this point. I mean, I like going from place to place. And I like the changes that happen, you know, from when you're working on the field, the day-to-day changes that happen. You know, it makes for a much more interesting day. This is KD2MHI. Back to you.
Right. Yeah, the problem now is, at least for me, I'm still working, but I'm ready to retire, which will be soon. Is that technology changes so quick. It's so hard to keep up with it. You know, to a degree. If you just have to keep learning. You just have to keep your hands in things and keep doing things. And if you don't, it just passes you by really quick. And of course, as you get older, at least what I've seen, my mind slows down a bit. It's not as sharp as it used to be. I can still do things, but at the same time, you know, your body says, "Oh, slow down. You don't have to rush anymore."
Oh, I understand that too. I mean, my biggest problem is I don't have the eyes that I used to have to see, you know, a lot of stuff that's going on the boards and everything. And to make everything worse, they're making everything on the board service mount smaller. So that just compounds the problem for me and makes things harder. I mean, I don't want to be what everybody calls, you know, an appliance operator, especially in this hobby. But it's just getting harder and harder to go in there and work on the smaller and smaller things. You know, I see myself with lights and magnifying glasses and everything else. But, I mean, all in all, I mean, this is a good hobby to try and keep up with the electronic stuff. It kind of makes you think a little bit. I mean, I was doing a lot of experimenting lately with APRS, and hopefully at one of the Limark meetings this year, I'm going to give a presentation on it. I'm putting together something to send over to, I think, Neil. So we'll see what happens with that.
Yeah, APRS is good, although I never really dabbled with it too much. The radio that I'm using now has built-in TNC for APRS. This one is a mobile rig that I'm using. That's what you're hearing, a Kenwood D700. And it's got a DB9 connector in the front of it, although I never used it. Of course, I can set it up. Are you going to be at HRU coming up? You know about that?
I've been talking about HRU with a couple of people. I'm hoping to be able to make it. I just don't know what my schedule is going to be. You know, my schedule's been kind of crazy lately. That's one of the reasons why I couldn't make the holiday party. But I'm hopeful that I'll be able to make it. Yeah, I mean, one of the most interesting aspects I found with the APRS is actually you can, you know, send emails and text messages through the radio to other non-radio devices also.
Yeah, right, with the with the computer at the other end, or your iPhone, or what have you, you could do that. Yes. It's amazing what you can do with the iPhone now. They have all these apps that do, as you know, do a lot of different things. Okay, yeah, see if you can make HRU. I've been working with Mother Ham, giving a presentation at HRU on, you know, transmitter hunting and direction finding. And this would be our, I forget how many years, we started, I think in 2002 or 2003, maybe a little bit later, I don't remember the exact year, it goes by so quick, but it's been doing it quite a few years. One thing I like about this hobby is the, we have transmitter hunts, you know, where a guy goes out and hides the transmitter, we try to find it with direction finding equipment, and I give a little talk about that, a little demonstration along with Mother Ham, and that's a lot of fun. So that's the beauty of this hobby, you can do so many different things. So try to make it down, and give a talk if you have that on your schedule. Or if not, maybe you want to attend our presentation. We usually, actually, always been the first one. It starts at 9 o'clock. So we were the first one on the runway, so to speak. Which has its advantages and disadvantages. But,
Repeater, time out.
Let me let it reset. I'm listening to myself, so I hear the timeout. So it should be a lot of fun. Hopefully the weather will be good. And see if you can make it down. Back to you.
This is KVQMHI. Yeah, I definitely want to make it down there. I mean, there's so much interesting stuff, and one of the things is what you're talking about with the direction finding and the transmitter hunts and everything, I find extremely interesting, so that's definitely something that I would really want to see getting down there. Yeah, I mean, I'm just, like I said, I'm hoping that the weather will hold out nice for it, and then I just got to see what's going on with work, if time will allow, and you know, as long as time allows, it's definitely something that I want to make it down for.
Okay, yes. That'd be good. It's on a Sunday. And it always is. So that's good also, so people are not working. All right, and that's about it over here. It's already 20 to 7. And got to get ready soon.
All right, well then, I'll be saying 73 then. I'm actually almost at my destination here. I'm going to be picking my partner up, and we're going to be heading north. So, all right, 73 for now. This is KD2MHI. Clear on your final.
Okay, I didn't get your call, by the way. I just want to make sure. Could you just give it to me one more time?
KD2MHI, Kilo Delta 2, Mike Hotel, India.
Okay, KD2MHI, got it, okay. I don't think we spoke before. All right, it's at 73, and have a good day too. This is Andy, WA2CDL. Take care.
All right, Andy, take care, stay warm, be safe, and I'll catch you on the radio later.
Absolutely. Same to you, John. You are an amazing. Christmas party, I don't think.
No, I didn't go.
That's too bad. I would have liked to meet you and to meet, Joan.
Well, that's not my kind of a event. I'm kicking around the idea of going to HRU for one particular reason. But other than that, you know, I generally don't participate.
John, it's hard to hear you. There's a hiss, and you're not speaking up. Just speak up a little bit. Or maybe increase your power. And, you know, it was a very, very good time. It cost me a few bucks. I had to hire an ambulance to get there. And it was $175, but it was well worth it.
Well, like I said, it's usually not the type of an event that you'll find me at. I don't go in for large parties like that. I'm more of the small dinner party, you know, 6, maybe 8 people. That's about it.
All right, well, whatever floats your boat, as the expression goes. But I had a very good time. You know what I'm going to do today when they open up at 8 a.m., the agency that sends the attendants here? I have a question for them. See, with all these agencies, they're not allowed to allow their attendants to take you anywhere in their car. I would like to go to more Walmart meetings. So I'm going to talk to this lady about, she's my coordinator there. I want to see if she'll agree if I go to a lawyer and have him fill out a waiver. Maybe then they'll let me go with the attendant.
Yeah, that's possible. It's hard to say. Most of those rules are pretty strict. But, you know, check it out. You could get lucky. Anyway, like I said, you and Patty have a good Christmas. And a happy, healthy New
Year. Okay, John, that sounds like you're starting. You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to send you a picture of our Christmas tree. It's gorgeous.
I got a family Christmas tree that has decorations on it that go back to the 1870s and 1880s that were made by family members. And if you look at the tree, you can say, oh, this is something my Uncle Vinny sent in 1923, and this is something my dad sent during the Second World War from the South Pacific. It's like it's almost like a family diary. It's 8 feet tall, it's about 6 feet wide, and it has 700 lights and about 500 decorations, so it takes a month to put up.
Okay, John. Well, we have a gorgeous tree. Let me check the number. The number you gave me, is that a cell phone? Because I can send you a picture of our tree. Do you know a lady that comes in here at night, Verna? You probably heard me mention her. She's from England. And she got the tree for me. It's an artificial tree. A lot of people are using them. It only came with lights. You know, LEDs. Do you know she spent her own money on the ornaments? She doesn't want the money back.
That's very kind and very generous. You know, lucky to have her. Anyway, I am going to sign Richie, because I got to get going. Got to leave the house. You take care, and, you know, like they say, season's greetings. Stay warm.
John, before you go, that number you gave me, is that a cell phone where I can leave you a picture?
It's my home phone number. But when I leave the house, it becomes my cell phone number. If I'm in the office, it's my office number. It's a universal number.
All right, so I take it I can leave you a picture, right?
That's correct.
Okay, John, very good. I was hoping you would be at the party because I wanted to meet you. But we'll meet. We will definitely get together. Catch you later, KD2YXP, M2EO.
KD2YXP, M2EO, I'll be clear. You take care.
Into KZ testing on the Limark repeater. Good morning.
Net tonight at 8:30. Welcome to the W2VL repeater. Tonight at 8:30, this is the W2VL Amateur Radio Repeater System.
WA2CDL, KD2, yes, why? WA2CDL, KD2, yes, why?
K2KNB.
How you doing today, Ricky? KTUPS Mobile.
I'm doing good, Rich. I had a nice conversation the other day with, I think it's Jim, who's a driver out of the Farmingdale facility, Melville facility. So we got to talking, because he's a ham radio operator coming back from out east. So we got to talking to him, of course he knew you.
Yep, yeah, Jimmy Gleason, KD2GPS, I believe. When I was in the package, he was in a car or the package truck right next to mine every morning on a loading belt. It's funny because I got into feeder, and it was probably about a good 10 years since I had seen him or spoke to him. And he heard me on the radio. He had gotten his license. He was trying to call me. He goes, "It's Jimmy." I'm like, "Jimmy who? You know, Jimmy?" I'm like, "I'm still not ringing any bells." Until he finally said, "The truck that was right next to yours." Just I never expected him to be here, you know. But it's pretty cool. And he made it up into the tractor trailer division now, so he's making more and working less.
I didn't quite understand that part of it because he doesn't have a specific route. I guess it depends on what size a load is that has to go to a particular area. So I think he was coming back from, I forget what you told me, they built a large facility out east. But I assume that's where he's coming back from.
But there's one in Nassau that's in by Hofstra, and then there's two in Suffolk. One in Melville, right near Adventureland, off of Route 110 on Smith Street. And then there's one on Horse Block Road out in Farmingville. And that's, they call that the Suffolk building, and the one in Melville is Melville. But then there's also one in Laurelton, which they had, gave up, and got back again. So that one's open. And then Maspeth, Queens, East New York, Forster Avenue, down in Brooklyn, a couple more. But he does a normal run, I think, where he's got a normal start time anyway. Goes over to Jersey, I believe, and back. And then the second half of his job kind of like varies a little bit with what's needed.
Yeah, it's interesting. I lived near the Forster Avenue one in Brooklyn, which I think was relatively small, at least when I was there. I don't know if they ever had the land in which to expand it. But it's interesting. My nephew's a sort manager for FedEx, and starting maybe a week or so ago, 7 days a week.
Well, it's that time of year, you know. And yeah, Foster's a fairly small building. It's past its capacity volume-wise, and they keep trying to cram more in it, and it just doesn't work. There's no room to put the trucks, and I don't like going there because you have to blindside when you're putting the trailers on. Most of the time, you have to pull in and then back on the right-hand side where you can't see. You know, normally, we try to pull up on the driver's side so that then when you turn on an angle, you can still see out the driver's mirror back to what's going on. But when you come in on the passenger side, it's blindsiding, and that's a lot more difficult. I don't like going to that building. But, what can you do? But yeah, we had some fun last night. I was sound asleep around 2 o'clock in the morning. And I woke up, I felt my partner kind of in a rapid descent rate pull over to the side of the road, lock up the brakes, get out, come running back in the tractor and say, "Ricky, get up, the trailer's on fire."
Wow. How serious was it? Because I just saw something on, television either last night or this morning about a trailer that went on fire.
Well, serious enough that they needed a tow truck to move it, but not serious that anything on the inside got damaged. And the funny thing was that the trailer was just serviced. They have to be serviced once a year, and then a sticker has to be put on, just like your inspection sticker on your car. The trailers have that as well, and it was just serviced in November. I don't know where, but they can find that out easy enough. And it was actually a bearing in the, there's twin axles on it. It was a big box trailer, 48-foot trailer, twin axles in the back. And it was the rear axle on the driver's side. The bearings gave out. there was no fluid left in it, I guess, whatever, or it had drained. There was fluid in it when we pre-tripped it in Louisville, I know that, because I remember seeing it, but maybe the plug wasn't in tight or something, and 500 miles or so down the road, they gave out, heated up, and started a fire. But the guy behind him saw it. My partner was driving. He saw the... Well, he didn't realize it was smoke at first. He thought it was just like dust, mist, and spray coming up off of the road. You know, when they put an excess of salt down and you drive down, it kicks up a lot. And that's what he thought it was. But the guy behind him kept flashing his lights and finally got him to pull over. And between his fire extinguisher and the one that we had, they got it out before a lot of damage was done. But the bearing was completely shot at that point. And the brake shoes are hanging on the inside, so they needed a tow truck for it.
So where are you now? Are you back home already?
KTUPS. Yeah, I just left the depot. We just took the tractor back. This happened, we were about an hour west of Harrisburg when that happened. And we sat there for about 2.5 hours before the tow truck finally came out, hooked up to the trailer. Took the tires off the rear axle and then chained the rear axle up so it wouldn't drag on the ground, and then pulled it with just the one axle under it into the Harrisburg facility where they would offload it and reload it into another trailer, and somebody else will bring it up into New York today at some point. But yeah, we just came home at that point, so I left the depot a little while ago. I'm heading home. I'm eastbound on the LIE.
Candy. All right, so basically you just brought the tractor home.
That's correct.
Wow, that's kind of scary. Fortunately, you had somebody behind you there to watch out for you. But they did have something, and I'm not sure what the circumstances were, whether it was a trailer that skidded because of the ice or something, and whatever it hit, it caught on fire. So, no Christmas from that truck, I guess.
Sometimes it's the contents that go up. If people pack stuff that they shouldn't have, if they don't pack the hazardous materials properly in the trailer, we don't really carry a lot of hazardous material. Matter of fact, we can only put a certain amount in the trailer. If there's more than that, they have to split the shipment between two trailers. Otherwise, we would have to be certified to haul hazmat, as well as have the trailers placarded for hazmat materials. But I don't know if it's limited to 100 pounds or less. But there are certain things that should not be put next to one another in case of an accident, or if they should mix, you know, different chemicals, whatever, that could cause a fire. And the guys that load the truck are supposed to be trained that all hazmat material goes on the floor, and get other packages put between it and any other hazardous material package, act as a cushion or a space. But this is a mechanical issue. So sometimes it's the brakes. If the brakes lock up or freeze up and heat up, that can cause a fire. A couple of different things. But fortunately, the packages didn't get burned.
Yeah, that is lucky. So every so often, you know, unfortunately, you have an accident with the FedEx planes or UPS plane. The plane goes down, everything's lost on that. But, all right, so you're kind of lucky there. I was going to say something, and then I just, the mind just went there. Hazardous material. I got a cleaning fluid, special cleaning fluid for certain garments, and it's always separate. You know, it can only go ground, it can't go air, and it'll never get mixed with any of the other materials. Sometimes it's vinyl that I might be getting, and it would basically dissolve the vinyl. I don't know that that's the reason why, but if it has it, it's combustible material. They'll only ship four quarts of it, I think, so 1 gallon of it, four cans at a time, and always on the separate wrap.
There's a lot of different regulations as far as what we can carry in what amounts. There's old charts. Anybody who ships hazardous material has a chart. They know what we can take. There's special books. The shipper has to be certified. It's a lot tighter than it used to be as well. But, I mean, it's amazing. Because even just nail polish, you know, that's hazardous material, acetone, anything like that. So, you have to be careful with that stuff. But, fuel additives, a lot of different chemicals and things. So, but, I saw the video on the news that the fuel tanker down in Baltimore the other day that went off the road, burst into flame. That was nasty. But, I mean, the truck drivers in particular, they should have known better. When the weather conditions are like that, you have the chance of icy roads, and you're driving on an elevated roadway, you have to be careful, and you have to slow down. And these guys were going, you know, full tilt around that turn, and all of a sudden realized that they couldn't stop. And, unfortunately, two people died in that one.
Yeah, I wonder also that whether they're not thinking in terms of the fact that they're a little bit slower on the road because of the weather conditions, and they don't want to get hung up with the driving restriction, whatever it is, 12 hours, 14 hours, whatever. So whether they get penalized. I once had some guys come in the store, and this is going back when I had a store, and they were independent drivers. And so they would bring a load from, I think they started out of Kansas City. I think that was their home base. So they might get a load from Kansas City to, let's say, Baltimore. And in Baltimore, they'd pick up another load that might take them to Bangor, Maine. And then they'd come down from Bangor, Maine. And they stopped in the store. They literally had run out of money, whatever they had taken as seed money for the period of time. But because they were kept picking up loads and they didn't want to turn them down, they were kind of running out of their own money. I think they had a credit card for gas, but they had no clothing. They'd been on the road for, I don't know, weeks, 3 weeks, 4 weeks, totally unexpected. So they came in the store and I ended up giving them some stuff. And it was interesting. They had no money. So I let them out with each other. I gave them a bill. I said, when you get back home, ship, you know, send me the money. So, you know, what would be the odds that I'd get the money? One of them sent the money, the other one didn't.
KTUPS Mobile. Well, that doesn't surprise me with some of those independents. Depending on where they get their loads from, whether it's a load board. I mean, nowadays it's easy. You can actually do it over the internet and through your cell phone. But a lot of times these guys used to go through brokers. So, like, if you had four skids of widgets to ship between City A and City B, instead of you trying to find a truck driver to do it, you would contact a local broker, give him the load information, and say, listen, you know, I need, or I'll pay $500 to get this thing moved. Then the broker takes, and he advertises it, but he may charge anything from $750, maybe even $1,000. Or you know, he's going to add his fee on. So let's take that back. If the shipper was going to pay $500, the broker's going to advertise and say, I got this load and it's going to pay $350, maybe $400, and he'll keep $100 for himself for doing nothing else but just setting up the load. But how well those guys pay is another story, and that's why some of these guys get behind the eight ball. You know, they pull the load, but they might have to wait 2 weeks to get paid for that particular load. But meanwhile, their expenses keep coming in, the truck payments, the insurance, the fuel. And if you don't run your business right, you can find yourself short on cash real quick.
If I remember, they told me that their gas bill when they were on the road was in excess of $500, $1,000 a week, something like that. And again, in this particular case, they were expecting to be out for 2 weeks or something, and then they got another load wherever they were, which took them a longer period of time. And I think by the time they got to me, I think Long Island was their last drop-off, and they were heading back towards Kansas City at that point. But again, you know, I don't think these guys were particularly wealthy. All of this stuff is coming out of their pocket, and literally they had no money by the time they got to me.
That can happen. I mean, we go through 1,000 gallons of fuel a week in my truck, and at something close to $3 a gallon on the open market, you know, that's considerable money. UPS gets a big discount because they sign contracts, and we used to fuel on the road with the team trucks. But now they make sure we're full when we leave, and any of the places we go, we can get there in one shot, with the exception maybe Dallas, Texas. We'd be on fumes if we went from New York to Dallas. But then what we used to do is be able to pull into a local TA, pilot, whatever, and fill up. Now they have us, they'll route us to the closest UPS facility. We got to drop the trailers, go over to the pump, fuel up, go back, hook up, and then get back en route again. But it's cheaper for the company in the long run, because the diesel that they have on property that gets dropped off by whatever vendor it is, they sign a contract like a year in advance with a cap on the price, because they're guaranteeing, a million gallons, whatever it is, however much gallons they use. So they sign a contract and get a really cheap price.
Why did they make you on Hicks to fill up with gas?
Well, that's easy, because the pumps are usually in the corner of the yard or in a yard that part of the yard that's kind of tight. So there's no way you're going to be able to get up over to the pumps when you're still connected to the trailer, particularly two trailers. So you got to get into the yard, find a clear spot, drop them, go over fuel, then go back, hook up, and leave again. So it takes more time, but overall, it's still cheaper for the company in the long run. So we don't get the fuel up on the road anymore.
That's pretty wild. I would have thought that they would have some kind of a go-around where you pull your truck in, you just go around a big circle and come out to the pumps and don't have to go through the time of unhitching and rehitching and so forth. Well, they are, as their advertising says, I guess one of the most efficient. It was interesting, just in reading some things about them, which obviously you'd be more familiar with, but the fact that they do clean the trucks for the aerodynamics, that they have the translucent, I guess, rooftops on the truck, so you don't have to have a light on in the truck. A lot of stuff that they were probably innovative in.
They do a lot of computer studies on things. And one of the biggest things they did in the package division just before I left was come out with a policy of no left turns. They redesigned all of the routes so that you only had to make right turns. Of course, you might end up in a situation every now and then where you have to make a left, but they wanted to eliminate as many left turns as possible. And there was two reasons for them doing that. One was a safety thing, because more accidents happen in a left turn than you do in a right turn. But also, you usually end up waiting to make the left. So you're sitting there idling and using fuels, waiting to make that left-hand turn. So they redid everything and had most of the guys just doing right turns.
Yeah, that's funny. When I was a kid, when I was younger, and would work on cars with friends or whatever, one of my friends was coming home from work and he lost his engine mount on one side, so now the engine is torquing up. He couldn't make a turn. I forget what it was. He couldn't make a comfortable turn to the left because of the almost gyroscopic effect of the engine. And so he had to figure out his route to come home making all right turns.
It's almost like being in Jersey where you got to make three rights to make a left. That drives me nuts. But I don't really know how well that works out for them, but all the jug handles they got down in Jersey, that's a crazy place to get around.
I think that they actually did studies, and I think they realized that they were, not the best things, and but it was just too expensive, too costly to try to get rid of them. I think, it probably works in a small town, but I'm trying to think, when they first came out, I was going down to South Jersey. My brother was stationed at McGuire at the time, and we were going down to Mount Holly. And it was before, the turnpike was there. They hadn't done the other one, I think, which is 295. So we were doing like, I can't even remember, 1 to 9 to 30 or something like that. And, a couple of those main intersections had those jug handles. That was the only way to get around the traffic lights and not slow things down. But no, they were never really good.
Well, the roundabouts are fun too, but you can't do that in a really high volume area. You know, Mountain Suffolk is a few. They work all right. And when I was over in Ireland, they had them all over the place. And that took a little getting used to, particularly when you're driving on the right side of the car and the roundabout's going the opposite direction. That kind of threw me for a loop. But they actually did work fairly well.
Yeah, I think it's cute when we come up to the end of Bethpage Parkway and you have the roundabout there. You know, people are entering it never knowing, never being told for sure who has the right of way. But, I'm pretty sure that I've never seen an accident there, as a matter of fact. But I guess they're fun. You know, it takes the stress out of driving to go to a roundabout.
I remember that scene from Chevy Chase and Family Vacation where they went over to, I think they were in England, and you got stuck in a roundabout there. Look, kids, Big Ben, Parliament. And they were in it for about an hour, going around and around and around.
Well, and I think when I was younger, I actually ended up going to Italy, and I remember some of the roundabouts there where there's just a million cars, and it's just crazy. And particularly if you're coming in, well, you know what, I go to a roundabout when we're in Florida. There's a big roundabout in Hollywood, Florida. And you got to have a sense of where you're going, otherwise you end up being forced to make one of the turns that you didn't really want to take. But it's also interesting, it's a very large roundabout, so in the middle they very often have concerts and things.
Even down at the end of Wantour by Jones Beach, by the one water tower there in Ocean Parkway. So when they redesigned that one, and there's someone in a lot of traffic, sometimes it's tough when you're coming southbound on the Wantour and you want to go east on Ocean Parkway, and you have to get, you can't just go in and stay in the outer loop because then you'll get pushed right back onto the westbound side. So you got to go in there with a sense of definitely knowing what you want to do and where you want to get out, and you can't dilly-dally. How to make, you don't make friends that way.
Now that is a tough one. And even sometimes coming around from going eastbound on Ocean Parkway to head north on the Wantour, it's just where the traffic is, you know, and if people want to be stubborn and not let you in easily, that's a problem. Anyway, we can go to 673. Gotta start moving and get some stuff done this morning. So, catch you later. Good talking to you. Safe ride the rest of the way. And that's it. K2UPS, K2KNB.
Okay, Rich, good timing. Just coming up to my exit here anyway. So, have a good day. Stay warm. And enjoy your holidays. K2UPS.
Net tonight at 8:30 W2VL. Repeater system.
32HL.
K2KNB, good morning, Howard.
Yeah, good morning, Rich. How are you?
I'm doing good. I guess I'm going to end up going out a little bit, but we'll see how cold it is. Are you out now?
Yeah, and it is very, very cold out. It's definitely, if you're going to be out for some time, you definitely need gloves.
I have to help clean out an apartment, so I'll take gloves with me. I have to walk some stuff over to the trash bin. So, yeah, it's about 200 feet between the apartment and the trash bin. So I will definitely take gloves with me and a hat.
I was outside just taking some things from the car and putting them in the garage. And it was definitely, glove weather. So, yeah, definitely a good thing to do. Yeah, I was listening to you talking to Barry yesterday or the day before about Rockaway. Yeah, I've been out here a long time, too. I know Barry, about 50 years. When I first got my ticket, 13. I live at the west end of Rockaway, about Bell Harbor. I went to Far Rockaway High School. And we had three Nobel laureates graduated from that school. Richard Feynman was one of them. Joyce Brothers. and a few others.
Yeah, as I said to Barry, back, I can't even remember, I'm thinking from maybe 1948, 47, something like that, to 1952 or 53. My grandfather used to rent a house out there for the summer. My grandmother was a stroke victim, and back in the days when she had a stroke, they didn't really have the rehab. So she... Whatever, it was good for her to be able to get to the ocean for that period of time. And we would be either in Bell Harbor or in Neponset. And we used to go down to that big open field as you'd come off of the... I guess as you come off the bridge opposite the hospital there. I forget what it was called. You used to play a lot there. And those were the days when as a five-year-old, my brother was 5 years older than I, but, the two of us together could go to the beach, and nobody was concerned with us walking over there and enjoying it. And then I reminded Barry that there was a butcher shop on 116th Street. I can't remember the guy's name, something like Marty or whatever, just the nicest guy in the world. And I always remember that if I'd ride my bike down there, I could always walk in there and give me a slice of bologna, a slice of ham, whatever. And any of the kids that did it, he always did the same thing.
I'm trying to think of who that might have been. But can't recall. But definitely a lot of places like that. There was a movie theater, one of the first movie theaters on 116th Street, that had had two theaters in one. It was one of the first, I believe. Separate theater. I think somebody mentioned that was some sort of first in its kind. Yeah, it has quite a bit of a history. I remember you were also talking about there was an amusement center on when I first moved there. It was in 62. There was an amusement center around the 30s, in the 30s on Fort Wolf, and I think there was a fire there. Then there was also Barry mentioned a lot of hotels, old hotels. There was another hotel on Beach 116th, and that went to a fire. It was a five-alarm fire in around 1968. It was called Curly's, right on the boardwalk there. So, I've been here since 62. I'm getting tired of it. Back to you, Rich, W2HL.
Thank you, Candy. Well, the things that I remember, again, because I was very young, but we were just going out there for the summers, was that my father had a business in Manhattan. And here we come, on that, whatever that train was called, I don't remember what it was called. It wasn't the A train, I forget what the number was, but it was like one of the longest rides in the subway system to come from the city out to 116th Street. And I think also you could take the Long Island Railroad and or you could take a subway train out there. I forget. But I've been back a few times. There's a restaurant at the end of 116th Street on the west side that has become pretty well known. And the school that I taught in used to have some parties there, retirement parties, things like that. And one of my friend's sons actually, he was a food purveyor and he used to bring a lot of food. Sell a lot of food to that particular place. But, it was very nice. And, of course, they had the plane crash when was that? Also 2001, where the plane went down in the Rockaways. And then, of course, Hurricane Sandy did a number there.
Yeah, it did a number on my house. My house is still reeling the effects of it. The plane almost hit my house. It was 8 blocks away. On 131st, I'm on 139. I remember when it went down and... when it hit the ground, my whole house shook, the whole thing shook, and the tower went out. Oh, by the way, Ina, the XYL sitting next to me, she's says hello. She wants to say hello.
How are you?
It's Ina. So I was going to mention the one of the Far Rockaway High School. Richard Bay graduated there. Joyce Brothers, Richard Cohen, a guy who writes for the Washington Post. The guy who received the Nobel Prize in Physics in 1965 on quantum electrodynamics, Richard Feynman. He was a Nobel Prize winner in physics. Carl Icahn, graduate of Far Rockaway High School. Bernie Madoff and his wife. And a few others. And me, I graduated too there. Back to you, Rich, W2HO.
Hey, good morning to you. In fact, your name is Ina. But it was very nice meeting you, and you should get your hand license. Because you're spending a lot of time listening to it, and you're very observant. It had a good reputation. In fact, one of our guys that grew up in the Rockaways, I think. I don't know if you know Ray Kuruskin. But he grew up in the Rockaway, and I think he went to Far Rockaway. And then he ended up teaching there for a number of years. But a very good reputation. And the reason why that came up was that somebody that I went to college with, and again, I can't remember, it was two brothers separated by a couple of years, but one of them did become a judge. And I'm thinking the name was Goldstein, but I'm not sure. But it is interesting that Madoff went there also, and his wife. What a nightmare that must have been for people. Anyway, Howie, I'm going to say 7-3. I really have to get started for my day, and I'll take a nice hot shower so that I can go out in the nice cold weather and not freeze up too much. But good talking to you, and we'll catch you again. W2HL, KTKMB.
I'll go out right away. If you take a real hot shower, I think it can open up your pores. They stay open for a while. I think you can catch a cold that way, unless you, if you go out right away after a hot shower in this type of weather. Yeah, Goldstein, that sounds familiar. Maybe it was his first name, David?
You know, I'm not sure. No, the one that I went to school was not David. I am thinking Alan, but I'm really not sure. I have to look back at my yearbook one of these days and just to see. And I don't remember whether it was he or his brother who became the judge.
I know a David Goldstein, who was a retired Supreme Court judge by now. And then also there was a judge who lived a couple of blocks away from me, who was a federal judge, and he's the judge, what was his name, Leo Glaser. He sentenced Gotti. And when he was... he judged the case there, and oh, he had tremendous protection all over his house. Matter of fact, I once drove his wife to the courthouse. I was driving limousine service for a while. Yeah, I know Ray very well. I grew up with him. He lives a couple of blocks from me. I think I asked him if he's still active when I saw him last. Don't see him too often. And I don't know what he's doing with that. Anyway, 7-3, have a great day. Rich, we'll talk to you later. W2HO, clear.
Okay, Howard, just one last comment. Ray keeps his membership up in Limelock, but I only hear him on here occasionally. I think the block that we lived on one year, I can't tell you if it's Neponset or Bell Harbor, but I think there was a judge, and I think his name was Mo Lane. For some reason, that rings the bell. Anyway, catch you later, KTKMB.
Yeah, there were a lot of city judges that lived in Rockaway, because at the time, if they were sitting on the bench in New York City, there was law that they had to live in New York City. And a lot of judges lived in Manhattan Beach, Bell.